was Jimmy Phillips.
All I know is this violates every canon of respectable broadcasting.
We're not a respectable network. We're a whorehouse network. We have to take whatever we can get.
Coming to you live from Louisville, Kentucky today, folks. It's the Off the Meter radio program with Jimmy Fallon. You'll notice the intro music a little different because we're doing something a little different this week. I am on vacation, or at least what I consider a vacation, which is chasing my family to dairy country on the Corn Belt of Wapakoneta, Ohio. Hey, you got to live big once in a while. And what I've done this week is a way of reaching out to you, the listener. It's kind of a goodwill gesture on my part, is rather than heading for the hills and leaving you with five episodes that we taped, you know, like a year ago, I've decided to record five extra interviews this week and give you, like, some bonus content. That's basically what this is. It's like a little summer interview series, mostly because we don't have any content that we're comfortable labeling best of. We don't have the type of ego to say, like, yeah, this is the best thing, you gotta hear this. So what we do is we just keep on rolling, even on vacation. So I'm out in Louisville, Kentucky today with a fantastic guest. We are at the world-famous Galt House, which a lot of you will know as the official hotel of the Kentucky Derby. And I know when you hear that, you might wonder, like, wow, official hotel of the Kentucky Derby? Did Off the Meter get, like, a horse racing endorsement? Are you guys going to be at Churchill Downs next year? It's nothing like that. It's that myself and today's guest were on a 200-mile motorcycle trip yesterday. We needed some lunch and a break, so we stopped at a roadside barbecue joint called Hog Wild Pig Crazy, and we Googled hotels in Louisville, Kentucky, because that's where we were heading. And it just so happens that we landed on a place called the Galt House, which is the official hotel of the Kentucky Derby. So that's where I am. I am at the Galt House on the tail end of a 200-mile road trip and a pretty intense night of drinking. And I am joined by a woman. I would have to say this next guest has done more to be on the show than anyone in the history of the show. Like, I've had people write me letters like, hey, can I come on the show? I've had publicists send me books like, hey, can you review this on the show? We've had a lot of stuff like that go on, but this one's a little more unique. This next woman, in order to be on the show, was willing to move from Cleveland to New York City, marry me, birth me a child, handle every adult responsibility in my life from the winter of 2003 until today, and then, of course, that was not enough. She still had to survive a 220-mile motorcycle trip to get here. Please welcome the great, the fantastic, the lovely and talented Jenny Fallon. How you doing, champ?
Good, good.
First of all, really, though, thank you for being on my show. I know you're my wife, and it's supposed to, like, not be a big deal to get your wife on a show, but it's a big deal to the listener, and I'll tell you why in a little bit, and we'll get into that in a little bit. But I have to say first, nice ride down, huh, pal?
Yeah, it was pretty fun.
Jenny and I, for you, the listener, we're in Ohio because that's where Jenny grew up. And we basically scored some babysitting yesterday. We dumped our kid off on her parents and some other family members. They're complicit in this. They're willing. They offer this. They watch our kid for like 2 days, and we take a motorcycle trip. So what we did is we got on Jenny's dad's motorcycle without a map.
No.
We didn't even have a plan. We just got on the motorcycle and just drove away from our adult responsibilities.
Yeah.
And if you've never done this, you the listener, I recommend doing it once in a while. You don't really need a map to be successful on a road trip, or I know this is going to sound self-helpy, but in life, because I've never met two people with less of a plan than us, and somehow we've made it to the 24th floor of the Galt House.
Yeah, look at that.
I am interviewing Jenny on the top hotel floor,
yep,
of the Galt House, which is the official home of the Kentucky Derby. We're looking out at some type of mountain range as well as Louisville, Kentucky.
And the river. It's beautiful.
The Muhammad Ali Museum is like a block away. You can see that from here. But it wasn't always this pretty, folks. On the way down, we took a 220-mile trip through the back roads. We didn't want to take the highway. We wanted to be alone and just driving like those calm country roads with the nice vistas and the corn and the racial signs and the midget wrestling signs. When you commit to 220 country, we thought it was going to be corn, 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 big boy.
Right.
You know, corn, 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 Chick-fil-A. That's what we expected. It was not what we got.
No.
We started with a cult church.
Yeah.
On Route 127, we were near, like, we weren't in Eaton, Ohio, and no one knows where these towns are anyway, yeah. So who cares? But Jenny and I were driving along on this country road, and it's just a basic ride. She's got her arms around me. She's trying to grab my package. And it's our routine motorcycle ride.
Right, right, right. Same
She's
old, same
saying
old.
Filthy, unspeakable things into my ear, telling me what she wants to do to me when we pull over. And I'm fighting it off. No, no, no. I'm trying to take in the sights and sounds. But the point is, the first thing we saw, once we departed like civilization, was a church. And it was not... We didn't notice it as a church. We noticed an actual armored fortress.
Yes, with a little school bus in it.
It was amazing, folks. It had four towers, like sniper perches. Mm-hmm. It was made completely out of, like, what is that called? Like a wavy metal?
Yeah, you know, it almost reminded me of like a train car, like what a train car is made of.
Yeah.
Not like a commuter train, but like a...
Yeah,
you
so
know what I'm talking about?
So you got this this steel or metal fortress, mm-hmm, with four sniper perches. In the middle of it, there was a school bus that was also turned as if they would get inside the school bus for cover and shoot at you, because it was parked sideways,
yes,
facing the road, but inside a fortress,
yes,
that had an all dirt floor. And then next to that was a church sign that said, mm-hmm, the New Victory Church.
Yeah.
Which I can only imagine the victory they're talking about is not like the second coming, like, we won, he's back. Remember that 5'2" Arab guy? I can't even, they'll kill us for that. That Middle Eastern man 2,000 years ago, he's back. Well, the point is, I don't think that's the victory they're talking about. It looks like they're gearing up for a war.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing we saw on the trip, is a religious compound that's getting ready to take dudes out.
With kid soldiers.
With kid soldiers. No, it's a child militia. Jenny Fela taking it there, and I'm fine with it. But that was the first jarring image we got when we left the metropolis of Wapakoneta. Then we saw a bar that advertised midget wrestling.
Yes.
That went on.
Yes.
I don't even think you can say that in New York, where we're from.
No.
And this is not to say that Jenny and I are some, like, East Coast elitists, uber-educated, politically correct people. We're awful people. Like, in all fairness,
yes,
like, they thought, Paula Deen thought about mentioning her in her defense. She's like, hey, well, I'm not the Falas, all right? It's not like the Fela House. And that's not true. We're obviously not on a Paula Deen level. But the point is, we're not politically correct people. And we laughed. I want to go on record as saying the first thing we did was laugh. Before I try to dignify us and sound like we're the better people, we did laugh. We passed a venue with a dirt parking lot. First, it advertised like some country singer. Then there was a ladies' night. Then August 20th was midget wrestling.
Mm-hmm.
And the first reaction is still a laugh. And we were thinking about this. And if there's a little person out there and you hear this, you can tweet us in post, because this is a pre-taped interview. It's taking place on Thursday, the 15th of August, 2013. I know they don't like the term midget. They want to get rid of the term midget. Like little person or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I would almost think it's not so much about what you trade midget off for. It's almost like you should just trade it for nothing. Like,
right,
that's Bob.
Right.
Instead,
yes,
of midget Bob,
yes,
or little person Bob.
Right.
Or whatever they're calling, whatever the perfect term is to describe them in a sensitive, compassionate way.
Right.
How about just a name?
Yeah.
How about that?
Right.
You know, instead of Down syndrome or retard, because that's a common debate,
mm-hmm,
how about Skippy?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just give them whatever their name is. Whatever your name is. Your name's Bradley? Bradley. You know, we don't,
right,
need, there's Down syndrome Bradley.
Right. You don't need to pre-qualify.
Yeah, you don't need Bradley the retard.
Right.
You know, which, again, that's, in a, again,
Harry, that's
you
it.
Can't
we're
say
suing
these things.
What? We're going
we're saying
to
them
sue.
Because this is who we are. Mm-hmm. So the point is, we're 10 miles into the trip. We've seen an armed fortress church. We've seen midget wrestling. But wait, there's more. So Jenny is now, like, you know, massaging me and trying to win me over sexually on the bike. That's going on. Cop to that. Terrible things are being said. She's grabbing me in places I didn't know I had places.
Oh,
I'll be
stop.
Honest. And I start, but I get into it. I fall for it. And I start saying, I give pimp love. Do I give a little
you
pimp
do.
Love?
You do.
So what I do, ladies, you should hear this especially. I'm kidding.
You dirtbag.
What a loser. But what I do is, like, a lot of times I'll just grab my woman and say, like, really nice things. Like, you know, but I don't even get into it. But it's really, like, sweet, syrupy, complimentary, sincere, bullshit. And I kind of lose.
You called it bullshit.
No, it's a nice thing. So I'm giving Jenny like the "I love you, you're the greatest, can't believe we're married 7 years." I'm giving her that whole speech, and you interrupt me to point out a banner. It's an anti-Obama banner, and it says what? Explain it to me.
No, it was actually at a horse farm.
Okay.
And there's a big giant drawing of a horse, and the horse, I don't know how this is possible, but the horse is squatting and pooping.
Okay.
And so now they have a drawing of horse poop, and it says, "Hope and change," with an arrow to the pile of poop.
So it's,
I mean, clearly an Obama supporter, but
that's just how white folks will do you.
So it's basically a "hope and change" banner equals horse
poop.
Shit.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what they went with.
Yeah.
All right, so we're now 3 miles into the drive.
And kidding. Speeding up yeah. like crazy.
We're now starting to pick up speed because we see a sign that says guns, guns, guns.
Tourist information.
All
here.
Capitalized. Tourist information and guns, guns, guns. Not a comfortable region to be in as two unarmed people.
Right.
With, like, you don't have a New York accent. I certainly do.
Yeah.
They're not fans of New York.
No, 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 no.
They almost like New York less than they like Obama. Because New York out here, I once had a guy out here tell me, "New York, oh, you're from Jewtown."
Really?
It's like, I've never even heard that.
When did you talk to my uncle?
Jenny, come on. She's on fire. But I did. I mean, so they have a very wary opinion of us as New Yorkers to begin with. But a hell of a ride. So we got through that. And then basically what happened was, you know, we're probably 50 miles outside of Louisville, and we realized, like, all right, if we're going to go through with this Louisville thing, and I don't know why we wanted to keep driving south. I think most rational-minded people see a church fortress, a midget wrestling, and a hope and change banner getting pooped on and decide maybe a New Yorker doesn't belong any further south than this. But we continued south, and we pulled off, basically because Jenny and I, you know when you're on the highway, you the listener, and you're deciding whether or not to pull over by the blue signs that dictate what type of food options you have. You know what I mean? So you'll see like a McDonald's, a Wendy's, a Cracker Barrel, a Sonic. You know, you're rooting for a particular restaurant to be on the sign. Well, Jenny and I got a little selfish on Route 75 because we were seeing things like Longhorn Steakhouse, Chipotle, decent options, but we were looking for something we don't have back home.
Right.
So we selfishly plodded on to Route 71, continued south, and all of a sudden, there were no food options. The blue signs were empty. There was nothing going on but empty blue signs. And we drove on for about 40 or 50 miles, hoping one of them would present some type of culinary prosperity. We didn't find it, so we just pulled over. We pulled over to the Love's gas station, and We pulled off the road, and as we were basically just going to go into Love's, get some gas, and GPS possible restaurants in the area, like a mirage, we saw a barbecue joint. We saw a barbecue joint just unannounced on the highway, sitting next to, in like a little trailer, sitting next to the Love's gas station. Mm-hmm. It was called Hog Wild Pig Crazy.
Yeah.
Great name, great sign, the greatness stops there. It wasn't a terrible place. It was like, it was all right, listen. Considering it was unannounced barbecue, okay?
Right.
So this is like a paratrooper barbecue. It just paratrooped into our lives and ambushed us with barbecue. It was pretty good barbecue.
It was all right.
But it's not like blow your mind, you got to have this barbecue.
Right.
It was like, we'll call it barbecue. We'll slam it on the side of the highway where there's no food. They're not going to have a choice.
Right.
You know, so they could probably get away with making it worse because there's nowhere else to go.
Right.
They could certainly stand to make it better. I will say that. So while we were sitting there at the Hog Wild barbecue pit, and of course, Jenny's continuing to whisper the unspeakable vile things that she does. If you think she's horny on a motorcycle, hand her a bowl of mac and cheese and see what you get out of her. That's so amazing. It's so funny to think that if, like, I really was a pimp and I met you as, like, a runaway on a street corner, I wouldn't have to flash jewelry in a Cadillac. I'd just have some really cheesy mac and cheese. Oh, yeah, girl, you're going to have this every night if you work for me, baby. you like Velveeta? Oh, you know you do, girl. So, like, I'd be the mac and cheese pimp. But the point is, at that point in the restaurant, we realized we needed to make a plan. Mm-hmm. We went on, like, TripAdvisor or Hotels.com or whatever. Yep. We Googled Louisville hotels. And we specifically picked Louisville because I didn't want to wind up in Lexington, Kentucky, home of the Kentucky Derby, because it was my fear that it would be too expensive for us and we'd have a bunch of pretentious Derby people in, like, bonnets and funny hats that I didn't want to be around. So I said, let's go to Louisville. That's like the college town. Unbeknownst to me, Louisville is the home of the Kentucky Derby.
There's horses everywhere.
There's a horse right there
on the wall above us.
She's not even making this up. There is an actual horse staring at us on our wall, like a fine-ass horse painting.
Yeah.
So the point is, we wind up, in our effort to avoid the Kentucky Derby, staying in the official hotel of the Kentucky Derby. There are horses out front, like painted horses, and all of the Derby jockeys that have won the race have their handprints in the sidewalk of this hotel. Like, it couldn't be any more Derby if they fed us out of oat bags and shot us if we twisted an ankle. How was dinner? I don't know. My back's a little stiff. I don't understand what's going on. They just come in and mow us down in the lobby. It wouldn't be any good. So, as Derby as can be. Mm-hmm. So, we had a great night of drinking. We went to a barbecue joint. It was called Doc Crow's. Mm-hmm. Again, a fine Google effort by myself.
Oh, it was fantastic.
Because I Googled that. Because Jenny and I were walking down a beautiful place called 4th Street Live, which is like their Times Square, which is like their Beale Street, which is like their Bourbon Street.
Like Fremont Street.
Yeah, like a Fremont Street in Old Vegas, because it's got a canopy over it. And a cool place, and a nice place. But I was like specifically looking for barbecue, because I felt like the institution owed itself a redemption.
Right.
After our road stop in wherever the hell we were, Kentucky. So we did that, and we drank something Jenny introduced me to. It was called bourbon beer, which is exactly what it sounds like. It's beer with whiskey in it. I don't know if that sounds like it should mix, but it's fantastic.
It's amazing.
What would you say it was? Like on a 1 to 10 beer, like you drank a beer out of a bottle. Is that it's so hard to say anything's a 10. You know what I mean? Women call me a 10 all the time. I try to back it up.
All the time.
But it's hard to make anything a 10, but it's almost a 10. It was that good.
It was that good.
It was like you felt like you were drinking a slightly sweeter Guinness, mm-hmm. higher alcohol content, mm-hmm. but not as heavy.
Right.
It just had that note at the end.
Right.
But it was fantastic. We probably drank 20 of them. I mean, realistically, they said the alcohol content in it is twice a regular beer.
Right.
So yeah, we probably drank 10 of them between us, which is like 20 beers.
Yeah.
Which is like in an hour dinner.
Yeah.
It's a lot of drinking. Like, maybe we're not as happy as we tell everybody we are. So it's like, we're in a great place. We got this nice kid, and we don't have a lot of money, but we all get along really well. When we go out to dinner, we mainline alcohol and stumble all the way through Louisville. And we're lucky to be back in this hotel because Louisville is overrun with, like, these gangs of thug lesbians.
Oh, my gosh. And they ride bikes.
They ride their bicycle riding and motorcycle riding. And sometimes just hand-holding thug lesbians. And what I mean by that, and if that's a derogatory term to you, the listener, I want you to know I mean it in the most derogatory sense. They are thug lesbians. They are dressed like gangsters with the saggy pants, the bandanas
leather.
Around the head, leather everything, one pant leg lifted up, but lesbians, holding hands, kissing. Or at least maybe not lesbians. Maybe they're bi-curious thugs.
Maybe, but they seem
to be fans of women.
Yeah, and they were really, like, laying into this other guy on a motorcycle, just,
yeah,
like,
cursing him
yelling
out and stuff.
Everything at him.
Like, get off our block, you don't own the road.
Yeah.
Yo, what you doing up here, mofo? Because they're Asian. And but the point is, like, we were walking the side streets, and I've never had this happen before, but we actually decided to turn around because we were scared of the girls.
Yeah.
There wasn't a guy on the street when we were walking. We were walking up 4th Street and just heading, like, further and further south away from, like, where the main civilization is. And it was, like, the first time in my life I've actually steered you out of a neighborhood because, like, I was really terrified of the women because it looked like some drive-by thug, you know? And it wasn't. I mean, it sounds like I'm making it racial because that's kind of my default. But I'm not making – I mean, it was white. It was black. It was Hispanic. It was anything you could think of in leather, holding hands, and looking at us like they wanted us dead.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you don't belong here. You know, it was, so we're at the Galt House, folks, and we're happy to be at the Galt House. I don't know that we're ever going to leave the Galt House. I don't feel safe getting out of here. But I do feel safe, nice segue by me, doing this little interview. And the reason I wanted to do this interview, Jenny, and let me get this out of the way, is because I really wanted to, you know, clear up your image on the show. Because everybody knows you as, like, this sex-crazed alcoholic. And it was important to bring you on and let everybody know that there was more to you than just that. It's more than, like, a relentless sex drive and a drinking problem, which you clearly have. You didn't think you did. But after our bar bill last night, I think you do. The fact that we're even here at all with motor skills, it's a triumph. It's a triumph. Maybe that's what the new Victory Church was talking about.
Yeah.
We had our new church. So we've been shot at by churches. We did not toss any midgets, although the opportunity was there for us. It was presented. We saw the Obama banner get pooped on. Mm-hmm. We ate some forgettable barbecue. We were nearly killed by lesbian thugs. And we drank like we were pledging a fraternity last night. Mm-hmm. And here we are at the Galt House. It is 9:13 in the morning. We're staring out at the Louisville Slugger bat, which is right out our window on the 24th floor of the Galt House. That bat is a model. It's an exact replica of the bat Babe Ruth swung. Did you know that?
No, I didn't.
I read it in the brochure, because I'm a brochure guy.
Yeah.
Let's be clear about this. Before we start the interview portion of the interview, do the brochures they stick in a hotel lobby, are they really there to tell you what's around town? Or are they there because long before we had smartphones, we needed a fast read while we pooped? I want to know, because no one ever goes to them. Like, we're here in Louisville, Kentucky. We're not going to the birthplace of Abe Lincoln in Indiana, 212 miles away.
Right, right.
So is it really there because some well-meaning guy like the Gideons gave you Bibles? Maybe there's some other group of people that give you poop literature? Some people want the Lord in your life. Some people just want you to have, you're on vacation. Mm-hmm. Let's have an enjoyable, relaxing poop. I don't know that that's the answer. But nobody's using any of these brochures. It's all it's all caverns and boyhood homes and the Mary Todd Lincoln house. Who's going to the house Abe Lincoln's wife was born in? I'm not going to that house. I don't think anybody's going to that house. Is the point? You were excited to go?
Yeah.
No. And the point is, I don't know who's going, but it's there. It's advertised. So in reading the brochures, I read about the Louisville Slugger Museum. I read about everything to do in this town, basically. And I do know that that's the Babe Ruth Museum, the Louisville Slugger Museum, which stands right beyond the Muhammad Ali Museum. So we got a good view for the interview today.
Mm-hmm.
We're a little hungry because we're a little hungover, but we're going to get down to it. But these are the things people need to know about you. You grew up in Ohio.
I did.
You grew up specifically in what town, Jenny?
Wapakoneta.
Wapakoneta. Ohio, a happening place. It was a dairy farm in the beginning for you, right? Didn't you? You grew up a little bit on a dairy farm.
Yes, in the beginning.
Okay.
And then we moved a mile down the road, and then my dad stopped farming, but we still live on a farm.
You live on a farm, but you don't farm it.
Right.
Yeah, I get it. That
right.
makes sense.
Like a yeah.
Yeah. It's like, you know, when, like, they go downtown and they convert, like, the old, like, mental facility into, like, an old folks' home.
Right, right, right.
Yeah. Like, that would be considered, sure. If this was urban, it would be considered cool.
Yeah.
Because yeah. They do that. So you grew up on a dairy farm, Wapakoneta, Ohio, surrounded by corn.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a cool place. Like, I go back. I like it there a lot. How far, this is interesting for a lot of our listeners because they're in urban places. How far is your ride to school when you live out there? Like, elementary school was close. I saw your elementary school down the block.
Yeah, that was close, but we still had to take a bus because it's not residential. There's uh-huh. still, like, a lot of traffic, so even though it's close, you know, I still had to take a bus there. And high school and middle school were probably, like, 12 miles away.
12 miles to school.
Yeah.
I wonder what I know for us, the bus cutoff in Division is a mile.
It's a mile, yeah.
Because Levittown was, like, a mile long.
Mm-hmm.
So, wow, you had 12 times our commute.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what you did on the bus. A gal like you. A filthy girl like you.
There are white folks, and then there are ignorant motherfuckers like you.
So you grew up in dairy country. You played sport. You're a sport girl.
I did.
All right, let me do this then for the listener.
Okay.
Because this paints the picture.
Okay.
Which girl were you in high school? Kind of like the athletic girl, good grades, that wore her school jacket places?
Yes.
Is that who you are? I just nailed you.
Yeah. My Letterman jacket. I was really proud of that.
You were proud of your Letterman. What sports did you play? You played.
I did volleyball, basketball, and then I did track for a year.
You ran track?
No, I didn't run track. Let's be clear. So, I threw shot and disc.
Oh, you had the lesbian track assignment.
Totally. I did it for a year. I did it for a year because the coach like begged me to come out because they needed like strong girls to be able to throw, and I didn't really like it, so that's why.
Dawn,
I quit.
Quit shot put. Jenny, can you fill in? You're the only other 6-footer we got here.
Yeah. Dawn, I hated it.
Dawn quit shot put for field hockey. Dawn moved down to Louisville to threaten people on the sidewalk with a lesbian girlfriend.
So you got the lesbian track and field assignment.
Yeah.
And that's fine. And what grade was that?
I was a junior that year.
Wow. Shot put as a junior.
Yeah. And disc.
And disc?
I did both. I threw both.
Wow. It's so funny that we're married 7 years. We routinely engage in every sex act known to man.
Oh, God.
But I don't know any of this stuff about you. I'm kidding. By the way, she's really not that horny. Like, if you were to, like, kidnap her and take her home, you'd be really
under. Yeah, I was going to say, please.
You'd be bored. You'd have a really clean house and a lot of good food. But your website would have every, your computer would have every virus imaginable because you'd have to make through a lot of downtime. I'm kidding. I'm just giving you a hard time. So what is it? You don't want to be called a slut? You don't want to be called boring?
Somewhere in the middle.
You want to be somewhere in the middle. She's half slut, half homemaker. I actually think that's pretty fair assessment of you. I really do, to be fair. Half slut, half homemaker.
I agree with that.
Oh, jeez.
So, all right. Sports, Letterman jacket.
Mm-hmm.
It was, but you got engaged. Did you get engaged before college?
In college.
You got engaged in college.
In college.
Which college was this? You went to...
I was at the University of Toledo then, yeah.
So, all right. So, yeah, there was a point, folks. It sounds very easy, but there was a point where it was like, it was hanging in the balance. You were almost married. Didn't happen.
Right.
Wow. All of this underachievement would not be in your life. Were it not for this fateful decision. Now, listen, I don't want to put you on the spot in terms of who broke it off, but the point is it got broken off.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a nice guy. We're not those people.
No,
we don't trash the old administration.
Right. No, he was a nice guy. It was a high school sweetheart. And it was right. Just as you get a little bit older, you realize you weren't the same as you were when you were 16. And
you just kind of grew apart.
Yeah.
But it was nice. It was amicable.
Right. Right.
You see, it's kind of a classy way, the way I handle your exes.
Oh.
Because my exes don't always get that treatment.
Well, considering there's a huge difference in numbers.
What do you mean? I might
have
put up a few numbers in my youth.
Yeah, you've never had to come across an ex of mine.
But did you see how we just tactfully took a man you were engaged to be married to? He's a great guy, nice guy, wish him the best, move on. My guy's like, I ran into so-and-so today. What did that whore have to say?
Well, it's a fair assessment.
Like, you never even, like, met the woman. You don't even know what she looks like. What did that fat pig have to say for herself? Oh, that bitch. It's so, it is, there is a, I just want to point out a little bit of a double standard. I'm a sport about it. I don't care.
Well, listen, I have met yours, and that's why I can come up with
you,
that
I mean,
assessment.
This is unfair. This is unfair, and we should get this out of the way now. I think every bad woman that I've ever either A, fooled around with, or B, been harassed about fooling around with them but didn't do it. Because they're still in our lives.
Uh-huh. You know who you are. I know who you are.
Stop it. So I think every bad woman that's ever, like, either I've either fooled around with before I met you or been propositioned by since I met you are the only ones you meet. Because I was having this discussion the other day about, like, the women I've dated. I actually dated, like, I mean this, like, pretty dorky, solid women. They were not terrible women. I was just a terrible human being. You know, they just kind of met me at the wrong time. But the truth is, I also think like half that you might have created the right time. And I don't want to give you a big head here because I was the worst human being alive when I met you.
That's
like,
true.
I tell people, like I have famously told people that like on the night I met you, like my dick had just given me like its 2 weeks notice. It was like, we're not doing this anymore. This is out of control. I can't lend my name to this. Stop. And then I just met you that night, and I was like, oh, this is kind of cool. And I think, like, your hook to me, and maybe this has to do with your dairy farm upbringing or whatever the hell it is. You have an easy way about you that relaxes me. And I think that's, like, the hook of the marriage, though, is that it works. Because, yeah, like, you drive me crazy. Like, if we're doing something passionate, whether it's a fight or we were engaged in, like, actual physical sexual activity, like, we are passionate about each other, you know, whether we're getting along or not getting along. But I think what makes it sustainable is that, like, you're the one that kind of relaxes me.
Right.
And I don't mean it in that way where you drunkenly get up at the wedding and you're like, I married my best friend. Today's the day. Or that's every Facebook post, because our 7-year anniversary is this Sunday. I will not, and I forbid you from going on Facebook like 7 years ago today, I married my... Everyone does that.
I know.
And the best part about it is the ones that do it are usually like people we hung out with 3 weeks ago where the guy had her in a headlock or vice versa. She hit him with a chandelier at the end of a night of drinking. I married my best friend. If by best friend you mean WWE tag team partner, then yes, you married your best friend. No, I just married a fun girl. You make me, you know, I don't know, I'm at ease around you. I feel like I could be myself, so I'm happy. So engaged, University of Toledo. You then wound up in Cleveland State, which is where you met me.
Right.
Is there a difference between going to Toledo and Cleveland State? Are either of them a commuter school?
Well, yeah, both. Both. Oh, they both. Yeah, both yeah. I mean, they both have dorms and stuff. But
oh, they have. They both have both.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
They're good to get that out of the way. And you met me at the Hilarities Comedy Club. You were going to school and you were doing what? You were waitressing at the Longhorn Steakhouse.
I was.
Do you remember our first conversation on stage?
I do.
It's accurately depicted in my book.
Oh, yeah.
It is. If you read it, it's accurately... and you should buy my book, you the listener. Not that I would ever force a promotion into the interview.
Wow.
But it is on barnesandnoble.com, amazon.com for pre-order. That means you get it $5 cheaper when it comes out and everyone sees how good it is as a coaster. The price is going to go up. It's got one of the finest looking paperweights man has ever known. The price is going to go up. But the point is, yeah, that was a fairly accurate representation of our first conversation.
Yeah.
Which is just me like, is anybody celebrating anything? And they were like, you. And I said, like, how are you? And you were like really shy. And
yeah. Well, because it was my birthday.
That's not why you were shy.
No. Oh, but I was,
you're telling them yes. I was doing crowd work as an MC at Hilarities Comedy Club in Cleveland, because I have it like that. I've got those types of credits. And Jenny was celebrating a birthday. I famously asked anyone in the crowd if they were celebrating anything. It turned out that it was you. My reaction, like, I really thought you were engaged, because your friends are drunk and rowdy in a good way, but in a way that was like evocative of a bachelorette party.
Right.
Because Friday night comedy club or Saturday night, you get a lot more, and this was a Thursday night.
I was going to say, nice.
But you get a lot. Means a lot to me. I'll never forget it. It was a Tuesday. No, wait. It was a Wednesday.
That was March, right? Your birthday?
It was December 11th, 2003. It was a Thursday evening. And usually when you get like the 8 girls that drunk, it's not a birthday. It's a bachelorette party.
Mm-hmm.
So my assumption was that you were getting married, which was good and bad. I mean, bad because I was very interested in you when you walked in, but good because the girl getting married is usually a fantastic time on that last night out. Like, if you just get her away from the friends, I'm like, wow, I got a really hot girl that has a lot to cross off her list tonight. But I obviously that didn't happen. We talked, we got to know each other. This sounds so terrible, but we were physically in love with each other the night we met. Aww. Which is so terrible to say in public because it's such a cliched thing. But like, I mean this. I want to go on record as saying this. The third night I knew Jenny, she had already made me a mixtape full of slow songs. Full of slow songs with the reasons why the songs are on there, which is so fantastic to think when you know someone for 3 days that every song already has a reason attached to it. It's like a 28-year-old song, a new song and all, but the point is they all have a reason pertaining, which I was flattered by. But we were in love, man. We were actually, it's a crazy thing, but I mean, that's like the one thing we have in life, man. We actually just love each other and kind of have a good time.
Yeah, we do.
And this is a great episode if we're divorced a year from now.
This will be next year's this best of.
This is the best. Starting next year, we can have best of content. Coming up, Jimmy kisses his wife's ass a year to the day they get divorced. Just want to say I'm so happy with this girl. Cut the shit breaking and smashing. Gonna lose custody of my child.
Well, that's for sure.
So you met me in Cleveland. You moved to New York. Mm-hmm. There was a little bit of an adjustment.
Yes.
You would say. What is the people difference? We know there's a price difference between Cleveland and New York. We know, like, your money goes a little bit further in Cleveland, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
But did you notice a pronounced people difference?
Oh, big time.
And what was it? What do you think it is?
I think it's mostly, like, there's no filter. I mean, maybe that's just your family, but, like, cause that's really who I was around for the first, like, the beginning. But there's no filter. No one has a problem with telling you they think you're a jackass or your decisions suck.
We're opinionated people.
Very, very. And I think my family can be very opinionated too, but it's just said in a much more diplomatic way, and or might just be held in and not said. Right.
New York, New York people kind of cut
shock
to the chase.
Me, yeah.
That was a little jarring.
It was very jarring.
It is a funny thing in that a lot of people in New York really do feel entitled to their opinion in a sense that they're giving it to you whether you want it or not.
Right.
So in New York, someone will walk up to you on a street corner and just tell you what you're doing wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Which I kind of liked at first, because, like, wow, this is helpful.
Yeah.
But there are times when you're doing what you're doing for a specific reason and you don't really need the feedback.
Right.
And that does happen. See, my I'm just looking to look. My adjustment, Jenny just turned around because she saw me looking out the window like something was happening.
Yeah.
Certainly wasn't the window washer, judging by the quality of the windows. I was happy to hear about his retirement. Congratulations. His windows look like we live next to a smog factory. But no, my adjustment to Cleveland people, just Ohio people in general, and everybody has the stereotypical jokes we can make about the church fortress, the midget tossing, and all of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they are a little bit less PC, in my opinion. But they take their time. They do seem sincere, and it's not to say they all are on any level. But I actually liked the pace of life. Like, I feel like I've benefited more from this exchange because, like, I like going to Ohio. I like the kind of the slowed down pace of life and people are cool. Whereas I don't think by coming to New York, or specifically the pocket of New York I brought you to, which was like she started in Long Island. And Long Island is, it's a different animal. Like, people don't know that. But it is a different animal. Like, in the city, there's a connotation that kind of works against you as a comic. Because they're like, oh, you're the bridge and tunnel crowd. Because there's a version of Long Island that comes to the city via the bridges and tunnels, like everybody else who comes to the city from Long Island. But this is a specific connotation of people that look like Jersey Shore.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Yeah. Women who sound like mechanics but wear no clothes at all. But hey, sound like this. You know what I mean? Uh-huh. I'm going to fart on a train. But they look hot. Guys fall in love with them all the time. Like, comics always come up to me like, oh, I love those Long Island women. I'm like, because you don't talk to them.
Yeah.
And it's not to say they're all bad. Let's not make it sound like we're waging a character assassination on all Long Island women, just most of Nassau County. But it's not true. It's not true. But I know that I exposed you, and this is where I did it wrong. I should have exposed you strategically to elements of New York, different types of people, so you could have built up to that.
Yeah.
It's like, you go to the roller coaster, and they have this one ride that does 300 miles an hour, and it's considered the scariest ride on earth.
Mm-hmm.
If you go on that first, it's 10 times as scary because you haven't gotten into that ride tolerance. You know, when you go on like two or three roller coasters, your body, you're in a mindset now where it's not as terrifying and as jarring.
Right.
I basically moved to New York, unpacked the U-Haul, and put you on the 200-mile-an-hour roller coaster.
Right.
And that 200-mile roller coaster was filled with, like, ex-girlfriends.
Oh, my God.
Crazy opinionated people. So I owed you better than that.
Yeah. But people say, you know, they have, like, this opinion of New York City and, like, oh, everybody's rude, blah, blah, blah. I had such an opposite experience. I felt that people in the city, when we lived in Manhattan for those few years, I felt so much better. I felt people were much more polite, much more considerate, even if it wasn't, like, overtly, like, hey, how, you know, have a nice day. It was, you know, they kind of stepped aside on the sidewalk. They did this. They did, you know, but then Long Island, I felt like, I mean, I feel like the people that have an opinion of New Yorkers thinking they're from Manhattan, they really have experienced Long Islanders.
Well, that's interesting. That is interesting because they say you form your opinion of a state or a city based on who you bump into passing through.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, everybody thinks New Jersey is all, like, landfills and oil refineries because that's what you see from the highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the New Yorkers you see, if you're just passing through, are agitated commuters.
Yeah.
So that might be your opinion.
Yeah.
Because I did find the city to be, you know, again, I'm there every day. But they are. They're pretty cool people for the most part.
Yeah.
It's always entertaining. I mean, personally, I do like the city less now that it's supposedly safer because the appeal to me, and this shouldn't make any sense to you, but I always did like the fact that I felt more alive going there because I might die at any moment. And I don't think I really wanted to die, but there's something about that that really puts you on your toes.
Right.
So that was exciting. But you're here. You made it. You got through that adjustment.
Mm-hmm.
You met basically everyone in showbiz. You met, you know every comic in the city and stuff like that. And you get on nice. Like, you are a very adaptable gal. I would say that, Jenny Fallon. Whatchamacallit? You went from nannying to you started making cakes.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start making cakes again? You're self-taught. Everybody sees your stuff on my Facebook page. But how long did that take you for real? Because I don't really pay attention.
I started when Lincoln was just before he turned a year old.
Okay.
Because I did really kind of his first birthday cake was my first one that I was really kind of trying to make cute and do something different
to. What cake
too.
Did you make for him?
The monkeys. Remember, I had a big monkey cake. And a little monkey. Yeah.
If you've never seen Jenny's cakes, they're in my Facebook thread. They're in her Facebook thread. You can friend her on Facebook if you don't have a problem with nude photos in the middle of the night.
Stop.
Because when she gets going. Kidding. When this woman gets cooking. Heyo. You should check out her cakes. Everybody, it's so funny that, like, I'll go into the city and do a show that I think is, like, great. Like, I'll be so proud, like, the new stuff worked, or the crowd was, like, so on my side.
Mm-hmm.
Or maybe, like, but people, what I'm saying is people would, like, flag me down after shows. And I'm getting ready to, like, puff my chest for the good job talk. And they're like, yeah, I just saw your wife's cake on your Facebook page. like, oh, screw you. You know, just shut up. But it happens. But I'm happy to share that, what little spotlight I have with you, obviously. But, yeah, that's a funny connotation. People really like your cakes, man.
Aww,
but they taste amazing. It goes without saying, but I can't emphasize that enough. And it's not an infomercial because you're not selling them.
No.
But you really became you're like a prodigy. You're like a cake-making prodigy. Like, I have to acknowledge this on the air because I've never talked about anything in public as much as you and your goddamn cakes. No one talks comedy. No one talks showbiz or TV. No one cares. I just want to talk cake. Because at the end of the day, that's all we are in life.
Yeah.
We're just children looking
just
for that next
cake.
Piece of cake. And we all have a different version of cake and what constitutes that good cake. But that's kind of who we are, you know? So I should say that I enjoy pursuing cake with you, pal.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, we're so breaking up. It's going to be next year's. This is the greatest episode ever if we make up next year. We've just had an emotional 69 for 40 minutes, and now we're going to break up. But things I should thank you for. In writing my book, which I will not plug again.
BarnesandNoble.com.
But in writing my book, I mean this, if you happen to read this book and you like the book or you hate the book, this is something to think about. It's Jenny's fault either way because physically no. I'm entirely responsible for the content, myself and my editor, Jamie Nelson. But it physically could not have been done without the selfless sacrifice of the woman to my left.
Aww.
Can you tell I'm trying to get laid when the show's over, by the way? Is it obvious to anyone? It's not true because you don't have to try with her. That's why we're married. But the point is, no, I mean, really, it's, you know, we say this, I don't even mean it to be in like a laudatory, you're the greatest fashion, but that is an actual fact. Like, now, knowing now what goes into writing a book, like, I would not have committed to writing one because I would not have deemed anyone capable of that level of, like, sacrifice.
Oh.
Like, you literally did everything in my life.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever want to kill me during the process?
Yeah.
Like, because
I mean, but it wasn't... It wasn't so bad because we've gone through phases in our life where you just did nothing, and like but play PlayStation, and then I still did everything, and then I wanted to kill you. But you worked so hard on this book that it was a lot of work. I mean, you just, you know, like you said, I took over everything, and it's not like a pat on the back because you were, you know, you were doing things. You were day and night, every waking moment that I'd see you, even when you were able to be home. You had that laptop, you were working, you were, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, I mean, I didn't mind as much. I mean, it was, yes, it was a lot of work.
Because it was in the name of something.
Right, right.
All right. All right, so that's cool. So you kind of condone it because it wasn't like the usual
where
I bought like MLB 2012.
Yes.
And just committed to literally 2 months of around-the-clock PlayStation.
Yeah.
And then I'd be like, babe, I can't. I got to leave to do comedy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, hey, maybe I thank you for that the most, Jenny Fallon, that you have enabled me to maintain my childhood. Maybe that's why I married you. I don't know. Maybe I saw that in you because I'm a child. I'm just a big, you know, 235-pound child.
Aww.
And maybe you facilitated that.
Don't blame that on me.
No, I don't mean my intellect and everything like that. I don't mean any of that, Jenny Fallon. But I do mean maybe that's the hook in that. My disposition.
Okay.
Is such I'm just like a dopey, fun-loving dude. And a lazy, dopey, fun-loving dude. That should be said.
I agree with that.
But Jenny Fallon, I don't even know where to start other than thank you for coming on the show. That's first and foremost.
Well, thanks for having me.
But it was a big deal to have you on the show today. And I think everyone in our studio audience agrees. So we should get that. But no, seriously, man, amazing of you to come on the show. It is my resolute hope that we do more of these. Maybe we do one anniversary week every year out of superstition so we don't break up.
Yeah.
Because I'd be in bad shape if we broke up just because I don't know how to do anything
in
life.
Yeah, you'd be so screwed.
Like, I'd be able to find, like, some skanky women to hold me over. But I don't know who's going to do the laundry or any of those other things.
Your mother. You would go back home. That's exactly what would happen. You would revert back to your 20s. You would be banging skanks and having your mommy do your stuff.
Oh, hey.
That's exactly what would happen.
I gotta be honest, you're painting a pretty interesting picture. It doesn't sound terrible. Free laundry, tons of skanks. I mean, that's pretty much my 20s. If I wrote a book about my 20s, it would be called Free Laundry, Tons of Skanks.
And I would jump off a cliff if I ever had to read that.
Oh, Jenny Fallon, the best of the best. Hey, man, if we do die on the way back, because we have a 200-mile motorcycle trip ahead of us, let's hope it's at the hands of, like, some bad driving and not a cult. I don't want to get killed by a freshly thrown midget. Or shot down by
that's where they train them.
Yeah.
That's where they...
We're in bad shape. If Jenny and I do not get mugged by a couple of lesbian thugs here in Louisville, you will hear this interview right away. And we thank you for listening, man, and making this a great vacation week for me. And I hope you enjoyed the extra content. We close the week tomorrow with a fellow by the name of Dean Imperial, who is not only prominently featured in my book, but he is now the permanent co-host of the Off the Meter Show.
Yay.
Who saw that coming? Nobody knew that coming. We're making news.
Yeah.
It's funny how I put that at the end of the episode, because it was very presumptuous of me to think anyone even listened this far. Like, I probably should have put that at the beginning.
Yeah, probably.
Because this just turned into, like, mutual masturbation on you. I love you, Jenny. You're the best. You are the best. I do love you. I am starving. I appreciate everybody who listened. And thanks for listening. This is the best we can do. Both of us have known love before. Come on, all promising like the spring, to walk on out the door. Our hearts are strong and our hearts are kind. Let me tell you, just expect the words on my mind. You are the best thing.
When the Son of Man comes.